David Kerr is Rhodes Professor of Clinical Pharmacology and Cancer Therapeutics at Oxford University. He has an international reputation for the research and treatment of colorectal cancer, and in his work he focuses on developing new approaches to cancer treatment. David Kerr is also one of the co-founders of AFROX, an organization whose mission is to help improve cancer prevention and control in Africa. In this podcast, he discusses the cancer burden in Africa, why he became interested in this problem, and how AFROX hopes to contribute to improving the level of cancer care in Africa. David, you're a busy, committed researcher in the UK. How and why did you get interested in the problems of cancer care in Africa?
I think it's impossible to be a cancer researcher and not to be a member of a wider international community. So I travel widely, I lecture, I talk, I meet other colleagues around the world. And we're actually quite a small brother-sisterhood community of doctors who meet regularly, trying to pool our knowledge, resources and fight against cancer. One of our particular laboratory projects led us to develop a treatment which we think could be a very clever new way of treating liver cancer. Liver cancer is relatively uncommon in the West, most of it's caused by alcohol, but in sub-Saharan Africa, in the Middle and Far East, it's a common cancer with about 1 million new cases a year. And most of all, it's caused by the hepatitis B and hepatitis C viruses. And therefore, Africa wasn't a very natural place for me to visit. I, as you say, high-tech researcher, tend to go to the United States, to Western Europe, to collaborate there. But in order to find doctors who saw a lot of liver cancer, so that I could learn more about liver cancer, I visited Africa, to Gambia, the Gambia initially. And I was horrified by the lack of basic infrastructure to deliver any form of cancer care at all. And if we look at the projections which are being made by the World Health Organization about the number of new cancer cases, even though each of us and everybody listening to this thinks that cancer is a disease of the industrialized world, a disease of the West, a disease of the North, it's not. By 2020, there will be more cancer deaths in the world than AIDS, TB and malaria combined. And 70% of all cancer cases in the world will come from the developing countries, not from the developed. An extraordinary statistic. And those countries which will be faced most with this coming cancer pandemic are those least equipped to face it in terms of expertise, medical, nursing, equipment, drugs. There's just nothing there at all. And therefore, after I'd made contact with my African colleagues, particularly through the West African College of Physicians, visiting the Gambia, then Sierra Leone, then Ghana, I came back with some sense of zeal, wanting to make a difference and wanting to see what I could do to use my knowledge, that which I'd learned, the contacts that I had, to see if we could make a difference and start preparing through national cancer planning and other means to get sub-Saharan Africa in some way ready for the cancer problem as it begins increasingly to rear its ugly head.
So you clearly saw that there was a need in Africa for an improvement in cancer care and cancer prevention, and you wanted help. What were your next steps? How did you decide to pursue this?
Well, it was sort of, let's reform the band. I've done a lot of work with the NHS and cancer reform over the past 10, 15 years. And we had an incredibly fruitful time when Alan Milburn was the Health Secretary. He's a very good and close friend of mine. And we worked very closely through much of the NHS reforms in the late 90s, you know, through 2000 and so on. And Alan was a natural ally to turn to, incredibly gifted politician, clever, bright, credible grasp of, you know, health and how can we really make a difference. And so I went to see Alan and he immediately saw the problem, immediately signed up to wanting to make a difference and to help and to get associated. And so between us, we started to gather a group around us to think, to intellectualise, but above all, to see what we could do in practical terms to make a difference. I keep saying that, to make a difference, and it will be a recurrent theme in that for those listening, I guess we'll be urging them to see if they can help us make a difference too. Anyway, we formed this organisation, AFROX, the Africa Oxford Cancer Foundation. We did this a couple of years ago, and the first thing we did was we went to see the Department of Overseas Development and asked a simple question: is cancer in their radar screen? And of course, all the Millennium Development Goals, everything that's been done by WHO, has a focus on infectious disease, malaria, TB, AIDS, and so on. And therefore, cancer they were aware of, but it wasn't emerging as a real problem for them. And they said to us, well, you need to pose this question more widely in Africa. So Alan and I set up a meeting in the Reform Club, and 27 African health ministries came to it, many cancer experts from around the world, many leading health policy experts, WHO and so on. And but particularly to our African health ministers, we said, do you know there's a problem coming in terms of cancer? And secondly, should we do something about it, and should we do it together in partnership? And the answer to both questions was a resounding yes. So following that two-day meeting, the African Reform meeting, we published the London Declaration, which is on the AFROC's website. All of us pulling together, all of the attendees meeting signed up to it, the good, the great, organisationally, you know, lateral in its scope, saying this is important, there's a coming pandemic, and we're going to band together and do something about it. And thus AFROX was born.
And what tangible outcomes has the London Declaration led to?
So we decided, clearly it's a vast, huge problem, you know, setting out to bring cancer care to sub-Saharan Africa is the opposite of trivial. And therefore, we decided that there would be five pillars that we would found AFROX on. And that was around cancer awareness raising and prevention. There are many African dialects which just don't have a word for cancer. The disease, in a way, is invisible and doesn't exist. So awareness raising, something around cancer prevention, and as a very specific thing around vaccines. It's been estimated that about a third of all African cancers are caused by infectious agents like viruses. Hepatitis B virus can cause liver cancer, and something called human papilloma or HPV virus can cause cervical cancer, the commonest cancer of women in Africa. So we thought there was something that we might be able to do around vaccines and prevention, and that seemed important, and linking quite nicely with the WHO Millennium Goals. We thought that treatment was important, and we thought a focus particularly in childhood cancer. We've made extraordinary strides in the West of improving the cure rate for childhood cancers. And in for many cancer types, the cure rate's as high as 80% in the UK. If we contrast that with the cure rates in Ghana, even at their best hospitals, the cure rates are 1 or 2% only. So there's a huge gulf that we must focus on. And if you want to consider the future, surely the care of our children are important, and we thought that we would try and cure the curable, which would be the childhood cancers. We thought it important to think, as one of our pillars, to have palliative care, and that's symptomatic care coming towards the end of life. And clearly all of us are aware in the UK of the hospice movement and all that's meant in terms of palliation, care of the dying, the appropriate use of morphine to take away the fear and risk of pain, and just the general large improvements that have been, you know, brought around by charities like Marie Curie, by Macmillan, and so on. When I was doing clinics in Africa, I was seeing patients with massive tumour burdens, weeks of life left only to live, and the only drug that I had available to try and improve the quality, to damp the pain down somewhat, was paracetamol. I found that very, very difficult indeed. And therefore, reaching out at the end of life, being able to promise some lack of suffering, is an important part of what AFROX should do. And the fifth pillar would be national cancer planning. And that's where Alan Milburn comes in, and all the work that he'd done to provide frameworks that allow the health service to deliver, to plan, to come together, to cost out, to make a difference, to get that sorted out. So those are the areas in which we want to work. That's which we've documented. And we have a large list of African countries wanting to work with us. And we've started in Ghana. So we're invited by President John Kufuor and the Health Minister to work with the Ghanaian Cancer Society, led by the Reverend Father Victor Sackey, to come together and to construct a national cancer plan for Ghana. And we're in the midst of that just now. We've had wonderful support from the Ghanaian Cancer Society, from the teaching hospitals in Accra and Korlibu, the two main cities of Ghana, and with civil society there. And in April of this year, we hope to be able to present Ghana's first cancer plan to the new president. And many other of our African colleagues are watching this development with interest. And we feel that if we can do this in Ghana and develop a model, we'll be able to roll this out to other African nation states.
What do you hope that AFROX will achieve in the future, both in the short term and the long term? And are you hoping to do some more grassroots level projects as well?
Clearly with AFROX, we need to have an intermingled or mix of the short, the medium and long term. We need some quick wins, being frank about it, so that we can feel that those of us who are involved in it, that the network of friends, of associates, of colleagues that want to contribute and make a difference, feel that we're making real change with it. And the cancer plan in Ghana is one such quick win. We've made fantastic progress, and it's a desperately important initial piece of work with it. We've initiated another large programme looking at affordable cancer treatment. I mean, all of us know that even in the United Kingdom, you know, the fourth largest economy in the world, we cannot afford access to every new cancer drug because it's incredibly expensive with marginal benefits. So we're doing, I think, an important piece of work saying, can we treat cancer on a dollar a day in Africa? And can we simplify the chemotherapy mixtures and treatments that we've got so that we don't sacrifice too much benefit, so that we moderate the side effects, so that we make it cost effective and do some good? So there's an important stream of work going on with colleagues in America and Europe to get that sorted out. And that's a 6-month plan that will lead to, I think, major benefits that we can roll out across all of Africa very quickly to make a difference there. We have some very interesting palliative care projects working with colleagues in the hospice movement, again, particularly focusing in Ghana, that we think will reap real benefits in terms of training a new cadre or core of health workers, much as we did with Macmillan Nurses in the UK, to be able to counsel, to support, just to provide the fundamentals and basics of care for the dying cancer patients. We've got some fantastic ideas going on around cancer awareness raising. So television isn't so important in Ghana, but the radio is. Everybody that listens to the radio. There's a group that would allow us to write soap programmes for the radio with cancer awareness raising as a dominant thematic, with good evidence that doing that really, really makes a difference, you know, in terms of raising awareness of the disease. Another project that we've supported with some small grants is an informal breast cancer screening program. Breast cancer is the second commonest cancer of women in Africa, and of course in Ghana also. And working with the Ghanaian Cancer Society, we have groups of nurses going to churches at the weekend for informal screening. The church still plays a very big part in, I mean, Ghana closes down on Sunday, because, you know, people just go to church. It's a great meeting place that people come together to share. And the nurses are going there and offering screening, and we've detected, you know, a very significant number of new breast cancer cases that we've been able to push forward for treatment and driving things through that way. There are more, and perhaps if you go to our website and have a look, you'll see just how innovative we're being and the whole list of programmes and projects that we've undertaken in such a short period. I mean, AFROX in its infancy, we're less than a year old, but I think because of who we are, connections that we've got, we're already starting to have an impact.
How's the life of a typical cancer patient in Africa different to those that you see in the UK?
Oh, it's harder. The cancer patients, so when I go to Africa to see my friends, I always do a clinic, and the cancer that we see there, and pardon me for saying this, is almost medieval. the patients come with very, very advanced cancers. I mean, often because the patients don't know it is a cancer, and all of us understand wanting to ignore or push health problems away, often because they'll access non-conventional medicine, they'll go to a witch doctor, and they can spend months being inappropriately treated with, you know, who knows what, herbal remedies, lizard skin ointment, who knows what it is. And of course, during all of that time, the cancer is growing, growing, growing. And therefore, many of the patients I see are way beyond our capacity to treat and may only be weeks away from death. And the pattern of spread of the cancer is just like nothing I've seen, frankly. Because one of the great things in the UK, you know, because of screening programs for breast and cervix, we're detecting cancers at earlier stages. And of course, common sense dictates it's far easier to treat a cancer the size of my thumbnail than the cancer the size of a tennis ball. The problem in Africa is that patients are coming with cancers the size of a football, and that means that they're close to death when we see them, and we must change the spectrum of disease awareness raise and get patients coming earlier in the natural history of the disease.
In the West, we hear a lot about the disparities in treatment of AIDS, TB and malaria. But why is it that you think that most people know so little about these disparities in cancer care?
It's interesting, isn't it? As I said earlier, there are more deaths from cancer in the world than AIDS, TB and malaria combined. And we make counterintuitive assumptions that cancer is a disease of the rich, developed country. We just don't think of cancer as having any role in Africa at all, but as Africans live longer, as our lifestyles change, as we fail to eradicate this, you know, this burden of disease caused by viruses and so on, cancer is becoming a much, much more common disease. And I think it's just, you know, I mean, very reasonably, politically, the WHO have taken a very strong focus on infectious disease, but increasingly, heads of state from Africa and from other developing nations are coming to WHO saying, hang on a minute, we've really got to take care of other chronic diseases. We need to deal with cancer. We need to deal with diabetes. We need to deal with heart attacks, because as we're slowly winning the battle against infectious disease, then we're completely unprepared for treating these common chronic other diseases. And WHO are starting to respond by, you know, setting up task forces in cancer, other chronic diseases. So there's a change coming, but it's taken a while to move that very sharp focus on infectious disease.
Why is international support so crucial in trying to improve cancer care in Africa?
It always seems to me, I mean, if Confucius said that many hands make light work, it would sort of say, and again, we tend to take a collective approach to things. That makes me sound like an old-time socialist now, which I may well be. But it seems to me that the more that we pull together, the more that we share in terms of knowledge, wisdom, resource, the more likely we are to be able to make a dent in things. And there is no single group or single hospital or single country that could take on this incredible vast burden of disease in its own and hope to make a difference. And therefore, that's why I think that we've got to pull together internationally. And when Alan and I had our Africa Reform meeting in London in the summer of 2008, you know, most countries in the world were represented with cancer doctors there because they too recognised the coming problem, because they wanted to make a difference. And I, it's just part of the whole international collaborative aid world. We in cancer need to learn about that too and find out how we can tap into that energy, that sort of rich energy and wisdom that the infectious disease people have done.
And are you with AFROX working together with other organisations, both at the international level and local level African organisations as well?
AFROX is very handily positioned. We've had some very high level discussions and elicited great support from the World Health Organization. As it happens, I'm president-elect of the European Society of Medical Oncology, which, you know, has about 6,000 cancer doctors as members, and I'm using that as partner to bring in. we're developing a very good relationship with the Department of Overseas Development, DFID, and Douglas Alexander, the current cabinet secretary there, is a very visionary, great chap, and he's somebody that listens to us, understands what's going on, and is seeking to find a way to help us with this. We have friends in the Norwegian and French governments, we have friends in the State Department, we have friends in the pharmaceutical industry. So because of our little black book, our contact details, I think that we are starting to pull together an international coalition of people with the sorts of skills that we'll need. We've been well supported in the past. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation supported the reform meeting that we had in London last year. The World Bank came, as well as the World Health Organization. So we flagged the problem up to some of the key development organizations, and I think we've started the ball rolling. I think people realize that the cancer thing is, if we grasp the nettle now, we have an opportunity to try and deal with it before it runs out of control, as was the case with AIDS.
And what about within Africa?
In Africa, we have fantastic links in Ghana, and I think Ghana is our, I don't mean to sound hard, but is our test case. And if we can deliver things in Ghana and cause change there with the cancer plan, we'll be able to ripple and spread that out. But we have good links in Rwanda, in the Gambia, in Nigeria, in Sierra Leone, of course in South Africa herself. We have very good links in Tanzania, with a very good colleague and friend of mine, Twalib Nagoma. Further to the north in Ethiopia, in some of the French, the Francophone countries, Côte d'Ivoire, Togo, Guinea-Bissau. These are the countries that were represented at our initial meeting and want to work with us to deal with this and make a difference. So we feel a groundswell and an optimism and a welcoming from many of the sub-Saharan African countries.
And what do you think are some of the main challenges that you face?
I mean, the main challenge is not an intellectual one, because people see the problem, feel they want to do something about it, they believe the statistical projections, and on the ground they can see what's going on. I guess the main challenge in the world that is just now of credit crunches and so on is, can we bring a new resource to bear? And of course, although we will think laterally and we'll gather as much energy and wisdom as we can, and we'll use people as our dominant resource to make a difference, we need money too. And I think the fundraising will be difficult. I mean, people see it, they understand it, they want to help us, but I think it's going to be hard to get the sorts of money that we need to really make a difference with. So that's a huge challenge, and anything that anyone can do to help us with that would be fantastic. But of course, also perhaps more importantly, people should volunteer themselves. We've got something called the NHS, which I don't know is the third or fourth or fifth biggest organisation in the world. We have the Chinese People's Liberation Army, we have Walmart, we have, you know, the Indian Railways bureaucracy, and the NHS is up there too. It's this huge organisation, and I would like to find a way to utilise the NHS through volunteering, through hospitals twinning with hospitals, to find some way of really bringing the NHS into this. And because given the fantastic work we've done with cancer networks and the NHS, how can we build and lead these and link them to Africa? So there's a challenge there, but one which is not insuperable.
And what changes do you think need to happen in order for a real difference to be made?
Well, I think the differences, the real changes that need to happen are, people need to be aware, and therefore we've talked about awareness raising. We need to keep on banging and beating the drum about that. We need to, well, I guess, not overreach ourselves. I'm a sort of restless, fidgety person that always wants to run and leap before I can walk, because time's of the essence and it's running out for us all. But I guess there's something about not being overwhelmed by the size of the problem and trying to take it in bite-sized chunks. And we've tried to do that programmatically and country-wise. Fundraising is going to be a challenge. I think Afrox is tiny, 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 tiny. And I think that we need to grow Afrox. We need to move out of the couple of us that there are just now to see if we can have, you know, 10 or 12 or 13 or 14 or 15 people working at the base as officers to support the opportunity that we've got to make a difference in this. So that's not me sounding pessimistic, because we've made a great start, and on almost next to nothing we've started to make a difference. People are starting to hear the siren call. People are starting to join us. And I think if we can't do it, no one can.
And if people want to learn more about AFROX, and if they want to help, how can they do it? Where can they find more information?
Please look at our website. You'll like it. There's a lot of stuff on it. It'll let you to get in touch with us directly. And it's www.afrox.org. Have a look at it and join us.